Welcome to Module 6.3, Being Me, Connecting with You, Exploring Us. Before we begin, I'd like to give you a quick overview of what we'll be covering in this workbook. Number one, self-love strikes again. Number two, self-truth and honesty equals healthy relating all around. Number three, tune into your feelings, social intuition, connection, and safety. Number four, why are relationships with other humans so darn tricky? And number five, what is a good relationship? We've got so many amazing things to dive into in this workbook. Ready? Let's do this. Part one, self-love strikes again. Okay, I'm going to come out of the gate here with a simple, powerful, humbling, and yet liberating truth. Don't worry, I'll unpack it throughout the rest of this module, but for potency's sake, I'm just going to lay it out there and let you stare at it for a minute. Ready? Okay, here we go. Your relationships, past, present, and future, have one thing in common. You. Take a moment to read that a few times and really let it sink in. There it is. The empowering, self-energizing, scary as shit truth. And I'm going to repeat it one more time, just for reflection. Your relationships, past, present, and future, have one thing in common. You. Yep, as with everything else we've been discussing and exploring in Life Fun Purpose, you are responsible for your social life because you are the consciousness that creates it. As within, so without. Which means, my dear, that you are the captain, not the passenger, of this exciting ride called relating. And I'm here to hopefully help you understand what that means and how to take the reins to create, hell yes, social dynamics, decisions, and deep connections. In recent modules, we've focused a lot on self-love, and this theme continues into relationship with others because your inner world and your relationship with yourself are at the epicenter of any human connection that you will ever have. The more you love yourself and intend the best for yourself, the healthier your relationships will be. Said another way, the quality of your relationships, in large part, are determined by the quality of your relationship with yourself. Said another way, the quality of your relationships, in large part, are determined by the quality of your relationship with yourself. How other people treat you is a direct reflection of how you relate with and treat you, meaning that you set the thermostat internally for the relationships that you have externally. If you have a high-quality relationship with yourself and know your values, standards, and boundaries, you will likely be the conscious creator and nurturer of high-quality relationships with other people. You see, your thoughts and feelings have a direct influence not only on your inner world, but also on your connections with those around you. If you're self-loving, joyous, self-respectful, self-compassionate, optimistic, and an intentional participant in your life, your relationship status with friends, acquaintances, partners, or even strangers is most likely going to be on the positive, healthy, growth edge end of the spectrum. On the other hand, if within your relationship with yourself, you are riddled with anxiety, insecurity, self-doubt, low or no self-esteem, or any number of other gremlins, your relationship status with others is likely to be on the low, challenging, dysfunctional, surface, superficial, unfulfilling, unreciprocated, or even toxic end of the spectrum. If you have a low-quality internal relationship, you will likely have people in your life who are disrespectful, passive-aggressive, unavailable, judgmental, inauthentic, or who exhibit any degree of unhealthy behavior in the dynamic. And you will be, or might currently be, dissatisfied. That said, you must first up-level yourself, your inner world, self-love, and self-regard. Because your inner world is the mirror of the outer, if you are going to have positive, fulfilling relationships, the first area of focus and energy flow is within. Cleaning your side of the street first, as it's sometimes said. Which is why we did such a thorough exploration and building of relationship with self in modules 3 through 5. So now that you've gone through those modules and you're more self-aware, self-loving, and you're actively up-leveling your relationship with you, let's connect the dots between the importance of being true and honest with yourself and the impact that you have on your social experiences and relationships. Note, this will be unpacked in much greater depth in the required books for this module. Part 2, self-love and honesty equals healthy relating. The first piece of this is to prioritize yourself. As I've hopefully hammered home throughout our experience together on this journey, your relationship with yourself is the most important relationship that you will ever have. When you nurture and prioritize this relationship, you show up authentically as you because you are important above all else. I want to pause here for a moment and acknowledge that this can be super challenging because we've been so conditioned to sacrifice ourselves, put ourselves second, second guess our intuition or desires, settle, and in the worst cases, to believe that we deserve less than the best that life has to offer. It can be a huge trigger and terrifying terrain to actually own what we want and make a stand for it. To say yes when we mean yes and no when we mean no, especially when it comes to relating with other people. The gremlins come out of the gremlin garden like bees out of a hive when we decide to change course from unconscious settling mode and put ourselves at the number one position on the billboard chart of our existence, align with our inner truth-driven advocate, and beat the living shit out of those limiting belief systems that have been holding us back with the stick of our universe-given empowerment. But beat them to bits, we must. Beat them until they all flee our garden so that new, more benevolent and empowering creatures can take root and flourish there. The creatures of our beautiful lily in bloom purpose. You dig? Okay, I'm going to segue out of that metaphor for a moment. So what's the bottom line here? That yes, it is scary to prioritize ourselves. Yes, it goes against our conditioning, our patterns, and our tapes. And yes, we must put our whole heart into self-love and truth and honesty if we are to create our authentic hell yes lives and relationships. Which brings me to be true and honest with yourself. When you are true and honest with yourself, you are communicating to your soul, the world, the people around you, and your subconscious mind that you can trust you. That you're not going to go against yourself by putting anyone or anything above or before you. This creates self-love, self-esteem, and self-respect, and communicates the message to other people that you are real and real effing honest to boot. Which brings me to stop caring about what other people think of you. There's a great quote here by James Cooley that really describes what happens when we interact with other people. He says, "I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I am who I think you think I am." Pretty true, right? So, you know that thing that happens when you're around other people, whether it's out on the street or in a cafe or at a party? That thing that shows up all weird-like and you don't want it to be there, but there it is and you wrestle for it to go away, but you just can't seem to get it to release its grip on your whole freaking entity? That thing I'm talking about is the caring what other people think gremlin. Ugh, sucks, right? Like, how many times have you said to yourself, "I am done caring what other people think. I'm just going to go out about my day or night and be me for goodness sake." But that gremlin just doesn't seem to care what you want. The more you go about your experience, the more the caring about what other people think gremlin sinks its talons in, deeper and deeper. And there you are, conflicted, confused, annoyed, and probably, quite frankly, pissed off. Because consciously, you know that you don't want to care what other people think. But there you are, all anxious and self-conscious and awkward. It messes up your whole situation, right? You find yourself saying things and behaving in ways that are not you, which is not what you're going for on this whole creating my hell yes life journey, right? Well, I have bad news and I have good news. The bad news is that left unattended, the caring about what other people think gremlin will probably continue to parasitically piggyback its way into every situation that you go into and keep you from being yourself and sabotage your connections with other people along the way. Ugh, yuck, right? Let's not do that. The good news is there is a cure, an antidote to the poison, water on the wicked witch. And the cure begins with your core values. Remember that super important core values exercise from module 1? That's what I'll be talking about here. When you live by your core values and not the rules, conditioning, opinions, and expectations of other people, society, or cultural pressure, you are living and operating in alignment with your truth. You are you. In any given situation, when your attention is focused on aligning with your values and being super authentic to your star player, you go from, "What will they think of me?" to, "How can I be the best and most authentic me?" When you combine this with prioritizing you, you begin to realize that what other people think of you is less and less important, or just not important at all. This shifts your attention from what is outside of your control, aka others' opinions, to what is within your control and agency, aka your experience, truth, and presence. Talk about empowering. You get to put yourself in the driver's seat of your chariot. Pretty awesome. Here's the thing. When you focus on the opinions and judgments of others, you literally hand over the reins to them and say, okay, I'll react based on whatever you think of me. And if you think I'm great, I'll think I'm great. If you don't, I'll judge myself, shame myself, and probably do whatever it takes to change my behavior so that you'll accept and like me. This is how we lose our identity, ladies. This is how we create patterns of struggle and disconnect within ourselves and with other people. This is how we layer on the masks and costumes and gradually become someone that we're not, which leads to superficial, surface, insecure relationships on all levels, including our relationship with ourselves. On the other hand, when you're showing up honestly and authentically, you're choosing to take off the masks and the layers that keep you and other people from having the opportunity to get to know their real you, warts and all, and you give yourself and everyone around you the blessing and opportunity of having a genuine connection. As scary as it seems, when you are authentically you, you are actually creating a trust and a safety. The trust that you are who you are, no shocking surprises, no cowardice, no BS, and the safety that you're honest. And people usually really appreciate that a lot. Or if they don't, they may judge you and spew their gremlins at you. But even if that's the case, you know that you've been honest with yourself, which is the number one priority. And you don't have to take their BS personally. See agreement number 2 in the 4 agreements. Their opinions are not your responsibility. How you show up is. Okay, now that we've connected the dots between relationship with self and healthy relating, let's explore how you can take your empowerment, values, and self-honesty and create a framework by which you can intentionally navigate your hell yes relating. Part 3, tune in to your feelings. Social intuition, connection, and safety. One of the most important ways that having a strong relationship with yourself shows up is in your self-trust. As we've passionately discussed, when you check in with your values and prioritize yourself, you build an inner confidence and trust with you. As you practice awareness of what feels good, what feels bad, what aligns, what doesn't, you are consciously sending the message to yourself that your experience matters, is valid, and that you're going to operate from a place of respect for your star player. How does this come into play with relationship with others? Well, simply put, your trust in yourself is the fundamental foundation piece of navigating your social world, an internal compass, so to speak. I'll unpack this a bit here. On a conscious and subconscious level, our brains and bodies are set up to assess safe, unsafe, and unsure situations to help us survive. These information systems are here to help us, to guide us, and to inform us about how well other people resonate with us, and quite frankly, whether another person is a potential friend or someone we need to be cautious around or avoid altogether. Ally versus stranger danger, so to speak. So, ladies, I invite you to tune in to your feelings. There are entire systems inside of you that have been built over millennia to help you gauge other people's integrity, and you get to listen to those systems. Even if you turn out to be incorrect in your assessments of someone else, like, oops, Samantha's actually a really great person, your internal systems are there for you to listen to as the first line of assessment. Before I unpack this any further, I want to mention one caveat. Sometimes it is really tricky to parse out who is a legitimate friend or who's a foe on a feelings level, which is why we need to bring all systems online, physical, mental, and emotional. Oftentimes we get an internal warning signal that is based on past experience, a visceral reaction that is lodged in our minds and or our bodies from a different time in our lives. We may have been bullied, abused, traumatized, or had any number of unsafe experiences with people in the past that prime us to be triggered in real time. In essence, our system is trying to help us avoid repeated painful experiences by setting off the alarms to watch out. This inner detection system can work for us or against us. On the one hand, it's immensely helpful to have our physiology know what is safe and what's not before we even consciously make sense of it. This gut feeling or sense that things are off can steer us clear of untrustworthy, shady, unhealthy, or even dangerous people or situations. So when the system kicks off, consider it an old friend saying, "Hey, you need to check this out." On the other hand, when past experiences color our present experience to the degree that we're generally socially anxious, untrusting, or closed off to others, we may be mislabeling a totally neutral or positive situation or person and missing a perfectly good opportunity for connection. We may be overgeneralizing or blanket judging and therefore neglecting to be present with the person or people around us. I think it's important here to quickly speak to what's happening on a biological level when our system kicks off and why it's so important to check in. In short, our brains are highly efficient in many ways. One of those ways is that our fight, flight, or freeze response is a survival mechanism, and therefore, when there's a trigger, our brains redirect blood flow, energy, and attention to activate our sympathetic nervous system, aka our danger response. Because of that, our prefrontal cortex, which is the part of us that consciously makes decisions, it disengages, sometimes entirely, which essentially means that we are no longer connected to rational, voluntary thinking, and we are emotionally hijacked by our emotions, which basically means no choice. So, that being said, how do we tune into ourselves in a way that is safely serving us to connect with others in a meaningful way? Number one, presence and awareness. Slow down, take a moment to tune into your experience. What is happening for you, physically, mentally, or emotionally? Do a body scan. Are there any areas that feel tension, energy, or other sensations? Are there sensations of anxiety, fear, or unsafeness? Take a pause to check in with observation versus evaluation of your surroundings. Number two, is there anything objectively and/or obviously unsafe about the situation or person? If so, raise your awareness and check in with the following things. A, what am I feeling right now? B, what are my thoughts right now? C, what is feeling unsafe? D, what do I need to increase my feeling of safety and/or connection? Do I need to do something to calm my nervous system, ground myself, and bring my conscious mind back online? If so, I recommend the window of safety breathing technique. You can also ask yourself, do I need to speak up on my behalf? Sharing, requesting, clarifying, etc. Do I need to leave the room? Do I need to take a bathroom break or find a few moments of space? Do I need to choose someone else to talk to? Then ask yourself, what actions can I take to increase my feeling of safety and/or connection? Number three, if after you check in with yourself, there doesn't seem to be anything objectively unsafe or misaligned with the person or situation, you may be experiencing some old tapes and triggers that are trying to keep you safe based on past experiences. This is totally normal, and you get to choose what you want to do in that moment to reconnect with yourself and the present experience. Here are some suggestions. A, have a conversation with your inner protector and thank it for wanting to keep you safe. Acknowledge that it is there to try to help you and probably did help you in times when you were more vulnerable. B, recognize the old tape for what it is. For example, oh yeah, I'm feeling insecure right now because that blonde girl looks a lot like the girl who bullied me in high school. Whoa, that is so wild. The resemblance is uncanny. But I know it's not her. Okay, how do I want to respond instead of react? C, remind yourself that you are in the driver's seat and you can do whatever you need to do or want to do at any given moment. D, make a decision to engage in the present situation open-mindedly while reassuring yourself that because you're in the driver's seat, you can act on your best behalf whenever needed, if needed. E, what are your needs in the moment? How can you meet those needs? Who can help you? F, practice the window of safety breathing technique to calm your nervous system, ground yourself, and bring your conscious mind back online, aka out of emotional hijacking or fight, flight, or freeze mode. G, use the tools and techniques in the rest of this workbook to engage with the other person or people around you. Part 4, why is relating with other humans so darn tricky? Why is it so much of a puzzle to connect with awesome, trustworthy people, not to mention create and maintain friendships? I hear this question or a version of it all the time. From my friends, my family, my lovely clients, from the minuscule amount of media that I expose myself to. In fact, this is a question that I ask myself several times a week. All I have to do is think about the current political climate, global state of affairs, certain family members, or some of my own relationships, and I'm triggered into a momentary state of, what the F is going on, people? And then I remember how we got here. And I'm able to snap out of my state of perplexity and frustration and think more constructively. Well, most of the time, at least. Allow me to elaborate. First, I remind myself that I am human, that we are human. Beautiful, benevolent, baby-kissing, bomb-dropping, brilliant, and brainwashed human beings. We are, by nature, perfectly imperfect. We are biological, malleable, emotional, impressionable creatures, which means that for most of us, we're just trying to figure out this whole life thing, including how the heck to interact with our fellow humans. Whether it's feeling uncomfortable in a group of strangers, struggling to feel respected and recognized, or believing that we are unworthy of speaking up in a conversation, it seems that from childhood, we kind of have to stumble and bumble and trial and error our way through this whole connecting with others thing. We can't help but wonder as we morph into adults and find ourselves still trying to shake some of our adolescent awkwardness and insecurity, we ask ourselves, why is this all so freaking confusing still? Well, as we've explored in previous sections of the program, the environment that shaped us didn't always set us up for success. Whether we were Miss Cool or Miss Nerd Alert or Miss Athlete or Miss Tomboy or the good girl or the bad daughter, we were programmed by a faulty system that, although may have been doing its best, made our value, worth, and deservedness of human connection conditional upon a ton of superficial factors. Grades, looks, athleticism, humor, talent, smarts, style, money, cool factor, whether or not we did our chores, how strongly we pledged our allegiance to our cultural or religious practices, etc., etc., etc. Most of us were not given a lot of guidance about how to know our true selves, let alone how to have healthy relationships or what a healthy relationship even looks like, or that there's even a difference between healthy and unhealthy. We were essentially raised by a conglomerative guardianship of family, media, culture, religion, education system, and peers. And in many cases, it was the blind leading the blind, people teaching us what their parents and teachers taught them, which had been passed on for generations before them, way back to the dawn of time. And the things that they were taught may or may not have been best practices conducive to thriving. And the trickle-down effect of repetitive dysfunctional education made its way into our adult, why don't I have it figured out by now, lives. Well, in most cases, our guardians weren't given instructions on how to relate, and therefore, we weren't given instructions either. We weren't given a copy of Module 6, Relationship with Others, as kids, unfortunately. If we were really fortunate, we may have had a few people around us who were positive role models and mentors. Perhaps we had great parents and/or a teacher that believed in us, or a coach who focused on our self-esteem as much as our drive to win the game, or friends who saw and accepted us for who we are and who really demonstrated what being a great human and friend really looks like. But for the most part, for many of us, we were pretty much left to the whims of whatever the social group and culture scape around us decided for us and about us. We picked up those patterns, and then somewhere down the line in adulthood, we had some kind of awakening and realized, holy shit, I kind of don't know what I'm doing. I can't seem to stop caring what other people think of me. I can't stop comparing myself to everyone on Instagram. I can't go on a date without feeling like I'm being interviewed to be the first female astronaut to travel to Pluto. I keep saying yes, but I really mean no, but I feel bad if I say no to people. I actually don't like country music. Let me rephrase that. I can't stand country music, but everybody else at work does, so I just go along with it. They would freak if they found out that it makes me want to scream, etc., etc. It's kind of bananas, right? That here we are in adulthood, feeling like we're swimming in some kind of cryptic sea of human relating confusion. Where's the relating life raft already? Actually, strike that. Where's the gorgeous 50-foot relating yacht of the social seas with a luxury cabin and a giant compass on the bow? Help! Well, darlings, the information in this module, especially the workbooks that follow, are my sincere attempt to provide you with the relating rescue vessel of your creation via empowering you with tools, insights, and info. Alrighty then, let's strengthen those sea legs by getting educated and informed about relationships. Just like everything else in life and this course, we get to learn the elements of what works, what doesn't, and what to do moving forward. Let's start with getting some clarity about what we're going for here. Good, healthy relationships. Part 5. What is a good relationship? To set the stage, I'm going to once again quote the wisdom of Susan McMahon, PhD, from her book, The Portable Therapist, Wise and Inspiring Answers to the Questions That People in Therapy Ask Most. Note, these definitions and explanations are not exclusive to romantic relationships at all. In fact, I believe that they apply to all close, authentic relationships. To quote Susan, "What is a good relationship? One way to think about relationships is to visualize a continuum with narcissistic or taking at one end and codependent or giving at the other end. Healthy relationships exist in the middle band of this continuum with flexibility to change and move back and forth in the direction of the endpoints. Good relationships mean that no one involved in the relationship ever gets to the endpoint in either direction and nobody stays in one place for too long. A good relationship is also comprised of mutual respect and kindness to the self and to other. These are probably the most important qualities of a long-term relationship. These qualities can be, and often are, more critical to the relationship than love. If love means respect and kindness, then love is critical. However, too often what we define as love really means neediness, and we treat the ones we love without respect and without kindness. If what we call love is really need masquerading as love, then it will not produce a good relationship. A good relationship is also comprised of trust, acceptance, communication, a genuine liking for the other person, and a willingness to compromise at times. There must be a recognition of the other as a separate person from ourselves, with his or her own needs and values and choices. There are things about each of us that are separate from the other person and separate from the relationship, and this holds true for the other as well. Good relationships are not about constant closeness or consistent sharing and agreement. These attributes can quickly become suffocating and boring. One important reason to have relationships is to challenge ourselves into growth and development. This growth and development cannot take place in a threatening or scary environment. Thus, a good, healthy relationship provides a safe, secure, encouraging place in this crazy world in which we can be ourselves without pretense. We are allowed to express feelings, make mistakes, experiment, take risks, and be nurtured along the way. In addition to providing support and nurturance, a good relationship also provides stimulation and sometimes a good kick in the pants. One of the problems today in having a good relationship is that there are very few long-term models available to emulate. Another problem is that society has also taught us that the purpose for having relationships is to get our needs met through the other. The only way to get past this training is to recognize that the first and most important relationship that you can have is the one that you have with yourself. All your other relationships will follow from that. You can never have a better relationship with someone else than you do with yourself. No one can love you the way that you want to be loved. No one else can fill your needs. Susan McMahon. Note, we will be discussing both narcissism and codependency in Module 6.5, Red Flags. I agree with Susan's definition of what makes a good relationship, and I encourage you to reflect on your relationships and context of this, and how healthy they feel based on the important components mentioned above. Woohoo! All right, you have completed Module 6.3. Go ahead and digest this workbook and then move on to Module 6.4, where you'll be learning more about how a good relationship also involves you being clear, true, and honest with your standards and boundaries. And I'll be introducing you to the Relating Treasure Chest, which is full of incredibly helpful relating tools. I know this is a lot of information, but it is incredibly valuable for having hell yes relationships with others, and I hope you take the opportunity to begin weaving these tools into your life. See you in 6.4.